support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, both Oregon and Washington State face budgetary woes, prompting difficult decisions.
Capital punishment appears to be on the rise in many states.
And in international news, this last decade was the hottest ever recorded.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 25th. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland Parks and Recreation could bear the brunt of budget cuts necessitated by the city's $93 million general fund shortfall. Most of the city's general fund goes to just four places: police, fire, houseless services, and parks. Public sentiment is strong for better police and ambulance services, while houselessness is one of Mayor Keith Wilson's primary foci. City Councilor Steve Novick talked about the worst-case scenario for parks if the city council opts to make steep cuts in that arena. Novick asked, quote, "We have a lot of people saying don't cut public safety and don't raise taxes, and Mayor Keith Wilson wants to increase spending on homeless services. If we accept that as conventional wisdom, what does that leave to cut?" Novick added, quote, "Largely it leaves parks," end quote. The Parks Bureau said earlier this year that voters would have to approve doubling the current parks levy just to maintain the present service level. Proposed cuts include closing a community center, eliminating nearly all of the Bureau's after-school and summer programs, and reducing daily maintenance of parks across the city. Officials are exploring funding sources outside of the city's general fund.
Washington State's budget estimate is now not particularly encouraging. Lawmakers who were waiting for a new set of state revenue estimates got their figures yesterday. They provided more reason for a negative outlook. At a time when the state is already facing an operating budget shortfall estimated to be as great as $15 billion over the next 4 years, the latest forecast shows that money coming into the state's operating budget over the same period is expected to be nearly $900 million lower than projections released last year. Revenues for the remainders of this budget cycle show a modest $54.4 million increase from November figures. When taking this into account, revenue might be down $845 million through 2029. In the next two-year budget starting July 1st, the forecast shows an expected drop of almost $500 million. The legislature's Democratic majority have been signaling they're looking into potentially combining tax increases with spending reductions. State Ways and Means Chair June Robinson, a Democrat from Everett, described the projected revenue decline as modest and said lawmakers had expected it. Robinson said, quote, "While it doesn't change the broader fiscal challenges we face, it reinforces the need for a balanced and sustainable approach as we finalize the 2025-27 operating budget," end quote. Democratic Representative Tim Ormsby said, quote, "It just makes it that much more difficult for us," end quote. The Senate Republicans' budget leader said after the forecast that lawmakers need to take notice and show restraint going forward, especially with uncertainties at the federal level, which could affect the Washington situation. Republicans say that they want to avoid higher taxes, limit new spending on core priorities like education and public safety, preserve social services and protect the rainy day fund. Democrats have proposed tapping state reserves to help address the shortfall. House Speaker Lori Jenkins said, quote, "It's raining. There's nothing off the table," end quote.
Oregon's community health workers are getting additional recognition plus digital support to make their critical work more sustainable. KBOO's Lexis Ponce has more on the story.
Community health workers like doulas and medical translators play vital yet often overlooked roles in public health. In Oregon, efforts are underway to formalize and sustain the community health workforce. As trusted frontline workers, community health workers are embedded in their communities. Research shows they improve health outcomes by increasing access to preventative care like cancer screenings. To strengthen this workforce, Oregon has partnered with Paris Suite, a digital health company co-founded by Colby Takeda.
Our company is all about empowering them, supporting them with a software system that allows them to document all their activities, track the needs of individuals, track how they're getting support.
Oregon is one of 29 states that allow services by community health workers to be reimbursed by Medicaid. Data shows the skill sets are in demand, with jobs predicted to grow by 13% within the decade. Although the work of community health workers has largely been under the radar, the pandemic highlighted their value. Janine Smart with the Oregon Community Health Workers Association emphasizes their importance, especially for communities of color, immigrants, and refugees.
There are a lot of barriers for communities in accessing healthcare resources and having trusted information. And so being able to have a workforce that's already connected in community-based space has been pivotal.
Paris Suite provides support to help the health workers better understand contracts and process claims. Takeda says Paris Suite supports organizations that have been doing healthcare work, like screenings or providing resources to houseless people for decades. But until now, they have never been reimbursed by the healthcare system. He says organizations the company supports are making an average of $15,000 a month in extra income. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Lexis Ponce.
The Palestinian ambassador asks the United Nations to intercede in Gaza. Negative impacts from federal agency cuts continue. And states are pushing back on DEI. With those stories and more, it's Edwin Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The same images are back to haunt us. Small children on Garnier's little siblings, injured and disoriented, trying to comfort and reassure each other. Entire families killed.
Palestinian UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour is calling on the Security Council to condemn renewed Israeli attacks on Gaza that killed more than 400 Palestinian civilians. The Israeli Prime Minister says the deadliest single day in a year and a half of war is only the beginning. A fragile ceasefire held for 2 months but collapsed, with Hamas accusing Israel of not negotiating seriously on a final peace deal, and Israel demanding the release of more hostages. The Trump administration has cut funding for voting security, putting employees of the Election Cybersecurity Agency on leave. In spite of steps taken over the last 4 years, Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes says he feels like the canary in the coal mine.
We've had our knees kicked out from underneath us. Foreign adversaries now have an open door to come in and do all kinds of things, including repeating the pattern of bomb threats intended specifically to disrupt our elections on Election Day, like we saw in November.
Without a centralized election information analysis center, he says we'll see increasingly more misinformation and political deepfakes. Fontes says a bipartisan group of local officials are discussing a replacement. A federal judge in Maryland ruled Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency violated the Constitution in several ways during its rush to close the U.S. Agency for International Development. The judge's order says Congress created USAID and dismantling it would require changing the law. He also wrote Musk was not properly appointed. In a letter to Congress, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy says the Postal Service will work with the Department of Government Efficiency to reduce spending, cutting 10,000 jobs, reviewing retail leases, and tackling counterfeit postage. His letter comes amidst renewed discussion of privatizing the post office. American Postal Workers Union President Mark Diamonstein says that would be hard on rural America, bad news for the older adults, veterans, and disabled people depending on the post office to deliver mail to everyone and for their communities.
It's also very important, I think, for the public to be reminded that good living wage jobs help our communities. They help make them stronger. That good jobs turn over in the community, to restaurants, to small retail stores, to housing.
Several state legislatures are moving to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The Advance Ohio Higher Education Act would ban DEI at public colleges, prohibit faculty strikes, and make it harder to keep tenure. Scott DeMuro is with the Ohio Education Association.
There are very serious attacks on collective bargaining rights embedded in that law. It is one of these culture war fronts where extremist politicians are trying to eliminate all efforts at inclusion, diversity, and accessibility.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The Social Security Administration wants to impose tighter identity proofing measures in an effort to limit fraudulent claims. This will require millions of recipients and applicants to visit agency field offices rather than just using the phone. Beginning March 31st, people will no longer be able to verify their identity by phone. And those who cannot verify their identity over the agency's My Social Security online service will be required to visit an agency field office in person. The changes will apply to new Social Security applicants and existing recipients who want to change their direct deposit information. Advocates for retirees are afraid the change will negatively impact older Americans in rural areas, including those with disabilities, mobility limitations, and those who live far from Social Security offices. The plan comes at a time when the agency already aims to close dozens of Social Security offices throughout the country, as well as laying off thousands of workers. Those cuts could halve its workforce. The agency also plans to expedite processing of recipients' direct deposit change requests to one business day. Previously, online direct deposit changes were held for 30 days. Leland Dudek, the agency's acting commissioner, said, quote, "The Social Security Administration is losing over $100 million a year in direct deposit fraud. Social Security can better protect Americans while expediting service," end quote. He added a problem with eliminating fraudulent claims is that the information used through knowledge-based authentication is already in the public domain. More than 72.5 million people, including retirees and children, receive retirement and disability benefits through the SSA. Connecticut Representative John Larson, top Democrat on the House Ways and Means Social Security Subcommittee, said, quote, "By requiring seniors and disabled Americans to enroll online or in person at the same-day field offices they are trying to close rather than over the phone, Trump and Musk are trying to create chaos and inefficiencies at SSA so they can privatize the system," end quote. Many Americans have been concerned that the proposed changes, closures, and layoffs will make getting benefits much more difficult.
Child advocates in Texas are seeing an increased number of bullying incidences directed toward immigrant children. The situation is getting worse following mass deportation efforts by the Trump administration. Frieda Ross reports.
As the immigration debate continues, many children of immigrants in Texas who are American citizens are caught in the middle. An elementary school student in Cook County reportedly committed suicide after being bullied at school with false threats that ICE agents were going to take her parents away. Lorena Tule-Remain with M Schools participated in a panel on bullying offered by children at risk. She says school districts must recognize warning signs.
Have protocols for how to address these situations and for educators and all supporting staff to be trained on what are the identifiers or behaviors that I can keep an eye out to ensure that all my students feel safe and welcome when they are in our care in our campuses.
She says school districts across the state are reporting increased absences among immigrant children. More than 2 million kids in Texas have at least one immigrant parent. Statistics show immigrant children face racist bullying more than their counterparts because of their accents, cultural differences, or economic backgrounds. Jamie Freeney with the Center for School Behavioral Health in Houston says parents play a role in how their children perceive and treat others.
Oftentimes, students are picking up on the attitudes and the beliefs and the stereotypes that they hear among their own parents and grandparents and family members, and then they bring that into the school environment. We know for all kids, bullying has long-lasting effects on cognitive, emotional, and academic development.
She adds the current political climate means school districts must give staff the tools they need to respond.
We have to provide schools a way to enforce zero tolerance policies that specifically address race, ethnicity, immigration status, and language-based bullying. We have to teach students and educators how to stop it in the moment. What are the words that you can say to pivot the conversation so that it becomes one of celebration?
I'm Freda Ross.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO's News in Depth. We're speaking with Laura Grimes from Oregon Arts Watch about the latest Oregonian art news. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather has rain being likely. The low will be 42. Tomorrow's weather also has periods of rain. The high will be 48. Today in history, in 1831, the first U.S. bank heist occurs. Burglars stole $245,000 from the Citibank on Wall Street. It also marks, in 1848, the birth of American lawman Wyatt Earp. The quote of the day is from Sheriff Earp, who said, "Fast is fine, but accuracy is final."
The United Nations reports say the last decade was Earth's hottest ever. Carbon dioxide, or CO2, levels reached an 800,000-year high. Last year itself was the hottest year ever recorded. In fact, the top 10 hottest years were all in the past decade. The annual State of the Climate report by the World Meteorological Organization described an increasingly warming world, with oceans sitting at record high temperatures, sea levels rising, and glaciers retreating at record speeds. Antonio Guterres, United Nations Secretary General, said, quote, "Our planet is issuing more distress signals." He noted the international goal of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times is still possible, but added, quote, "Leaders must step up to make it happen, seizing the benefits of cheap, clean renewables for their people and economies," end quote. The report attributed the heating up mostly to human activities such as burning of coal, oil, and gas. It did say the naturally occurring weather phenomenon El Niño played a small part, and in the El Niño event formed in June of 2023 and dissipated a year later. Global heating is contributing to extreme weather events that have contributed to food crises and caused massive economic losses. There were at least 151 extreme weather events in 2024 alone. The World Meteorological Organization said, quote, "It's a wake-up call that we are increasing the risks to our lives, economies, and the planet," end quote. The report comes as Donald Trump has issued a series of rollbacks on climate commitments and cast aspersions on climate science.
An Arizona man who was found guilty of first-degree murder was executed today in that state's first use of the death penalty in more than 2 years. Aaron Brian Gunches, 53, was lethally injected with pentobarbital. It took about 17 minutes for him to die. Gunches fatally shot Ted Price, his girlfriend's ex-husband, outside the Phoenix suburb of Mesa, Arizona, in 2002. Gunches is the second of four death row prisoners in the United States set to be executed this week. Two executions are scheduled for tomorrow, in Florida and Oklahoma, respectively. Yesterday, Louisiana executed Jesse Hoffman, using nitrogen asphyxiation for the first time in that state. A Louisiana district court judge had issued a temporary restraining order against the execution, but the state Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court issued rulings allowing the execution to move forward. Gunches will be the first person executed in a state with a Democratic governor. Virginia did so in 2017. His execution had originally been scheduled for April of 2023, but it was called off after Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs ordered a review of the state's death penalty procedures. Gunches was charged with first-degree murder and kidnapping in October of 2003. He pleaded guilty in 2007. He has represented himself in the legal proceedings, even though he is not a lawyer, and he asked the Arizona Supreme Court in 2022 to issue an execution warrant against him to give closure to the victim's family. In late December, Gunches asked the court to skip legal formalities and schedule his execution as soon as possible, saying his death sentence was, quote, long overdue. The court refused the request and later set his execution date for today. Last week, Gunches gave up his right to seek a reprieve from the Arizona Clemency Board. At least 14 other people are scheduled to be put to death during the remainder of 2025. The other states with scheduled executions include Alabama, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas.
U.S. Customs and Border Patrol recorded 134 seizures of fentanyl in January and February, down 32% from a year ago. Meanwhile, there were 3,254 seizures of eggs and egg-related products in the same 2 months, more than double that as was seen a year ago. President Trump has cited reducing fentanyl traffic as a major reason for tariffs on Mexico and Canada. Statistics show that most of those caught smuggling drugs, including fentanyl, into the U.S. are U.S. citizens. The administration has shown wholesale egg the price. Let's start again. The administration has shown wholesale prices of eggs have dropped slightly, but that has not yet been reflected in store prices to consumers.
A bill setting up the Truth and Healing Commission for Indian boarding school policies is stalled in Congress. And billions of dollars in limbo from Donald Trump's federal funding freezes are affecting Alaska. With those stories and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Final okay is stalled in Congress on a bill setting up the Truth and Healing Commission for Indian Boarding School Policies. This week, a tribal leader in Wisconsin asked state legislators for help in getting that measure passed. Chuck Kornbach of station WUWM reports.
The bipartisan legislation would establish a federal commission to investigate the U.S. government's role in Indian boarding school systems, an era that began during the 1800s. The measure would also lead to more research into the school's effect on Native American communities and help identify pathways to healing from the cultural genocide critics of the schools say the institutions were designed to commit. Late last year, the U.S. Senate passed the measure, but the House of Representatives has yet to do so. During an annual State of Wisconsin Tribes speech to the Wisconsin legislature, St. Croix Chippewa Indians of Wisconsin Chairman Thomas Fowler spoke about the topic. He urged the Republican-controlled state body to encourage the GOP-controlled House to act on the bill, calling it critical for Native communities.
The tragedy of boarding schools requires remembrance so that the spirits of our ancestors are not lost or forgotten. We have a duty to afford them dignity and respect, to address the loss they suffered, oftentimes while being alone.
Fowler says he's not trying to criticize all of today's non-Indian politicians for what happened in the past.
I recognize that not all the people in this room are responsible for those detrimental past policies, but each of us have an opportunity and, quite frankly, an obligation to ensure that history never repeats itself.
The U.S. Catholic bishops have wanted representation on the Boarding Schools Commission. The bishops say that healing and reconciliation are only possible if all parties are involved. St. Croix Chairman Fowler also called on the Wisconsin legislature to support additional state policies expanding Native American education and legalizing medical marijuana. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
Alaska experts on energy, housing, and infrastructure say billions of dollars in limbo from President Trump's federal funding freezes are affecting local projects like heat pump distribution and building infrastructure to protect against storm surges and tsunamis. Representatives from Alaska-based organizations held a joint press conference last week. They said more than $5 billion are at risk from the bipartisan infrastructure law and over $720 million from the Inflation Reduction Act. Those numbers are a moving target, given some programs have been frozen and unfrozen irregularly. Tashina Duddle works at Deerstone Consulting, which supports tribal energy infrastructure projects across Alaska. She says many grants that are now frozen were for projects to prevent shore erosion and stabilize villages against permafrost melt and flooding. One program through the Bureau of Indian Affairs supports tribally led climate adaptation. It's allocated $72 million in funding for nearly 40 Alaskan tribal projects, but is now on pause.
Without this funding, villages will be lost to erosion, infrastructure will collapse under worsening climate conditions, communities will have to relocate without a plan, without resources, and without dignity.
Duddle adds that the projects also create crucial economic opportunities in rural communities, like construction jobs. Agencies are unsure what projects will be able to move forward and what spending will be reimbursed. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
In a correction to a previous story, Aaron Brian Gunches was the first person executed in a state with a Democratic governor since Virginia did so in 2017. KBOO News regrets the error. Now, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants the news to lighten up for spring.
You can't tell from the news where every day is the darkest day of the year. Did you see that on Friday over 100,000 people protested their right-wing government in Belgrade? Of course you didn't. That's too positive and encouraging. But it is spring. So many daffodils and flowering trees, an overpopulation of blossoms. Maybe some of them should be deported. Was the snow at Timberline dyed green for St. Patrick's Day? And maybe St. Patrick's Day will be banned as it privileges a specific ethnic and religious group. Five Minnesota Senate Republicans want Trump derangement syndrome, defined as the acute onset of paranoia in otherwise normal persons, listed as an official mental illness under state statute. Oregon Department of Revenue said I paid them too much, so a refund. I don't think I'll pay my federal income tax. There won't be anyone left at the IRS to notice. We could see 70 degrees next week. Maybe this Easter the American democracy, crucified repeatedly by you-know-who, will rise from the dead. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, David Rosenberg, and Lexis Ponce. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Thanks. Special thanks goes to Edwin Vieira, Brian Bull, Alex Gonzalez, and Frida Ross. The directors of the evening news is Althea Billings. The podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I am Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.